Mr. Eberhardt for taking this case. We appreciate your effort. Thank you. Case will be taken under advisement. We'll move to the third case for today, Lee versus City of Chicago.
Morning. May it please the court, counsel. Mr. Lee was a victim of a crime. He was shot while he was sitting in his car. He was not the intended victim. The City of Chicago Police Department impounded Mr. Lee's vehicle to search it for evidence of a crime. At the end of the time that the city required to investigate the vehicle, Mr. Lee contacted the city and was told he would have to pay the cost of storage and towing in order to get his vehicle back. He couldn't afford to, so he got a lawyer from the Legal Assistance Foundation, and the lawyer was able to negotiate a fee, a somewhat lowered fee, which Mr. Lee paid within a reasonable period of time. When he got his vehicle back, there was a six-digit city inventory number painted on the hood, the trunk, the roof, and both sides of the vehicle. The city's actions in retaining Mr. Lee's vehicle after they had completed examining it for evidence of the trial of a crime was a seizure in violation of the Fourth Amendment.
Could I ask, actually I have a number of sort of factual questions. When exactly did he first attempt to retrieve the car? Was it within 15 days of the notice, or was it within 30 days of the impoundment?
It would have been. The impoundment was 2 days before the notice, and he sought to retrieve it approximately 15 days after the impoundment, I believe.
So that's within 15 days of the notice, if
absolutely,
if it's before that.
Right. Yeah,
now,
of course.
Okay, my other, I mean, some of my other questions are sort of more legal in nature. After our decision in the Gable case, why isn't it true, even if we were to agree with you on standing for the damage to the car claim, why isn't he relegated to his state court remedies for that?
Your Honor, we would take the position that the Gable case should be the question of limiting in the context of a substantive due process to state claims, or if there is a constitutional right claim, should be looked at, should be applied only in the situation where there's been some kind of random unauthorized activity. And you have to look to the analysis in the Gable case. In the Gable case, the court relied on the Doherty versus City of Chicago case. Well, the Doherty versus City of Chicago case was a land use case. The court inserted the requirement of showing the exhausting of state remedies or proof of a separate constitutional violation to avoid acting as a zoning board of appeals.
But here, too, it seems to me that when, you know, and I want to get to the seizure point in a minute, but I'm trying just to focus on the damage point for
right.
The time being. As I say, assuming for the sake of argument that we agreed with you on standing, in this area of substantive due process, we try very hard not to create a whole bunch of new constitutional rights. There certainly are laws of the state of Illinois, if the state has your property and damages it, under which you can sue and recover damages. I mean, we relied on one in Gable, you know, the bailment statute, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we just leave well enough alone there and say the state remedies have not been shown to be inadequate, even if the state on purpose, or the city, I should say, in this instance, on purpose, spray paints cars while it has them. So what? Yes, that damages the car, but you can get the money if you sue.
Well, Your Honor, I believe that, again, looking at the analysis of where this limitation to state action came from, I believe it came from, you know, the procedural due process cases like Parrott, where what you were dealing with was a random and unauthorized kind of practice. And in that situation, it makes some sense. What we have here is a policy. We have a policy indicated by the notice that was sent to Mr. Lee that this is how they treat these things, and it's not random and unauthorized. And we believe that the Gable insertion of the requirement that you have to show that you have no adequate state remedy should be only in a situation when it's where it's random and unauthorized.
Did he didn't pursue, however, the hearing process that was available to him?
Well, again, this is not a procedural due process claim, and if you look at the notice, it's very confusing about what kind of hearing he was entitled to. Was he entitled to a hearing about whether or not the vehicle should be impounded? Because the hearing portion was discussed in the paragraph about impounding. The whole question of whether or not he should have to pay fees was in a completely different paragraph. So that it's very confusing to know exactly what kind of hearing he was entitled to. And keep in mind, Mr. Lee got an attorney, and the attorney negotiated with the city, so there's a possibility that could actually have been in the nature of a hearing. But again, we're not talking about procedural due process here, so the hearing is kind of a red herring in this question.
Let me ask you, I understand that Mr. Lee is rather poor,
yes,
and so on. But assume that he wasn't, and he had insurance. Insurance would ordinarily cover something like this, wouldn't it?
It may, but I think what we have to do is we have to look back to the question of the balancing of interest here. And I think, again, I'm going to shift here to the whole question of the seizure of property.
My question is more, when we think of substantive due process, we're thinking of pumping the stomach of somebody that shocks the conscience. You're going to compensate them for damages or something like that. I wouldn't ordinarily think of substantive due process covering something that's an insurable event that you can protect yourself against by being insured.
I'm not sure that it's actually any insurance company would actually cover the cost of the towing and storage.
Well, that's why I think we really need to stay focused on which part of this case we're talking about, because if somebody defaces your car, or for that matter, they knock out the window or whatever, and you have to go get your car repainted, depending on what kind of a deductible you have, maybe that's recoverable. Then you have the other half of your case, which is your Fourth Amendment claim, and that substantive due process claim, which strikes me as perhaps subject to a somewhat different analysis, at least as to the Fourth Amendment claim. You don't have to worry about what Judge Evans was talking about in terms of, you know, the shocks the conscience test for substantive due process. There you have an amendment that talks about seizing, so you have something you can focus on. There may be other issues with respect to that part of the case. So if we're, you might address for a minute the standing argument before we leave the damage part, though.
Substantive due process.
Yeah.
The question of standing, let me pull up my notes here. The trial court held that there was no standing because Lee didn't show that the car was spray painted while Lee had a property interest. But, you know, that's ridiculous. Mr. Lee clearly had a property interest. They gave him his car back. They made him show, in fact, if you look at the bottom of the notice, in order to get his car back, he had to show title or some kind of evidence that he owned the vehicle. So clearly he owned the vehicle.
When they gave him his car back, did they reissue the Illinois Certificate of Title to the car or in any other way take any action indicating that there had been a period of time that he didn't own it?
No. I mean, of course, it's not in the record, but generally that's not how it works. They take the car, you pay the money, and there's no interference.
Even if you're a little bit late with the 30 days, they don't in any formal way reflect the fact that they think that you don't own the car anymore?
Well, Let's ask...
No, if you give it back, they haven't crushed it.
That's the point.
Yeah. They clearly gave the vehicle back to him. And one question that has to be answered is, what was the 30 days? Because they said it was 30 days was from the point of impounding the vehicle. Well, there was no guarantee that the city would have finished examining his car. What if they needed the car until trial? Does that mean he has no rights at all? Because the notice said this is the only notice you're going to get, and you have 30 days from impoundment. And the other question is, of course,
were there different notices for just straight traffic violation impoundment, or I mean not traffic, but parking violation impoundment and impoundment for?
This one is titled "Vehicle on Hold for Investigation." And it's from it's only a notice with respect to the investigation of the vehicle.
It's not like the one parking.
That's correct. Again, back to the standing issue, the city had no authority to terminate Mr. Lee's property rights at all. There's no statutory authority, and there clearly was no waiver, although they mentioned waiver in the notice. Mr. Lee was pretty clear about the fact that he had rights to the vehicle and he was continuing to pursue his rights to the vehicle. He even got a lawyer. So there was no waiver on Mr. Lee's part. But more finally, the most important aspect and important aspect of this is that the court held that Mr. Lee had to prove when the spray painting took place in order to prevail. And this of course, was a determination that is solely within the providence of the city, and we were not given opportunity to take any discovery. In fact, discovery was stayed over our objection. So the standing argument, clearly, the city, there is no basis for the trial court's conclusion. I'd like to turn to the seizure question.
You're close to out of time, but you can do that if you want.
Okay. A seizure may begin as reasonable and then ripen to a Fourth Amendment violation. The city takes the position that if it's a reasonable seizure, they can do whatever they want. We're not focusing on when the vehicle was taken, because at that point, Mr. Lee agreed that they could take the vehicle. He wanted evidence to the courts to be able to get the evidence with respect to that vehicle. The city relies on the Fox case. And there the Fox case conflicts with the U.S. v. Place case that held that there can be a seizure even though the property is first taken legally. In the Fox case, though, it's important to note that the court expressly stated that it does not they were not ruling on the question of whether or not there was a voluntary taking. And here, of course, Mr. Lee's situation is much closer to the voluntary taking. He did not object to the initial taking of his vehicle. Now, the city argues that Mr. Lee merely had to pay money in order to get his vehicle back, and then therefore there's no constitutional issue. But I would point the court to the Soldall versus Cook County case, and there was a case where the property was seized solely for the purpose of getting a tenant to pay a mobile park home owner money. And then, of course, the Andrews versus Crump case that we cited, and that was a case where they found a Fourth Amendment seizure when the government put a tax lien on property. That's very similar to what we've got here. Although there was no statutory authority here, they had no statutory right to put the lien on the property. The seizure was unreasonable in this case, and in determining whether or not a seizure is unreasonable, you have to balance the nature and quality of the interest with the nature and quality of the intrusion on individual rights with the importance of a government interest. And when you look at what we've, if you view the intrusion here at the time that Mr. Lee could have gotten his vehicle back, there were the only interest, the city has conceded that the only interest they had was in the payment of money. Well, there's a very simple way for the city to get money paid without intruding on a crime victim's interest, and that is to give him his vehicle back and sue him if they think they can get a judgment against him about for this amount. And the city's approach is also arbitrary and irrational, because they're requiring the victim of a crime to pay the costs of investigating that crime. And that normally is the obligation of the of citizens in general. Not, you don't require the victim of a crime to pay for the cost of the state's attorney. You don't require them to pay for the cost of the police to investigate the crime. You don't require him to pay the subpoenas, the cost of subpoenaing witnesses in a crime. That's for the city to pay.
Well, if a person is shot and goes taken to a hospital and they do surgery, don't they, if the person, say, has a hospital medical insurance, that would pay for it, wouldn't it?
Pay for the cost of...
Yeah. So the victim, the city wouldn't have to pay for that.
No, but what we're talking about is the cost of prosecuting a case. And what has happened here is that the city arbitrarily has determined that people whose cars are needed for purposes of evidence of a crime have to pay. But people, say, for example, if there's a necessity of getting DNA evidence, which is a lot more expensive, they don't charge them. So there's an arbitrariness here, and there's just no need to intrude on the victim's rights in this manner.
Thank you, Ms. Combs. You've exhausted your time, but I'll give you some time for rebuttal.
All right.
Nope. May it please the court. The parties agree that the police lawfully impounded and searched Mr. Lee's vehicle because it contained evidence of a serious crime.
Let me ask you this. This finding by the judge that there was no property interest, was that an argument that the city made, or did the judge come up with this?
And you're referring to the inventory number?
Yeah, they're saying that after 31 days, he had no property interest in this.
City did argue that there was no standing in this case, because by the 31st day, when he retrieved the car and when he discovered that the inventory numbers had been painted, and there is no allegation that they were painted prior to the 31st day, it is our position that he had forfeited his rights to the car by that time under Illinois law.
How did he ever prove when those... How does he prove, especially without any discovery?
Well, he certainly could have alleged. I mean, for the standing purposes, you do have to present competent proof, but he not only didn't present proof, he didn't even allege that on the 30th, prior to the 30th day they were painted. And
well,
I think he certainly needed to make an
allegation.
Now, we
had a case earlier today, the first case where somebody showed a tattoo to the jury, and that was supposed to have been the inference that that was there 2.5 years before the display of the tattoo to the jury. I just don't understand this whole idea that he didn't have a property interest here. I think he clearly did all the time.
I would respectfully disagree. Under Illinois law, the city was authorized to impound his car to search it for evidence. Well, actually,
that just means it was defeasible, because the city had no business giving its own property randomly to some citizen if the property interest had terminated. The most I could imagine is that as of the 30th day, he might have had a potentially defeasible interest in the property if he never showed up in time to prevent the car from being crushed. But I can't believe that the city just goes around giving its cars and giving its typewriters and its computers to citizens who don't have any property interest in those things.
Well, but I think what happened here is the city was willing to waive the forfeiture because
he still had the car. The city, if he really didn't have a property interest in that car, it was just like one of the police cars parked down on the street. Are you telling me the city could just decide to give that car to me or to you?
No, it couldn't. But
of course not. And so it shows he still had an interest, maybe not a fully fledged property interest, but all he needs is some interest in the car to defeat the standing problem.
Well, but Illinois law does sort of provide for this situation. I didn't rely on this provision in my brief, but section 4-207 of the code says that if you get there before the city has disposed of your car, you know, the city should give it back upon payment of towing
and storage. Which means you still have a residual interest in the car. If that's what that statute says, it seems to me clear that you still have enough of an interest in the car that you have a continuing adverse relationship, you've suffered injury, in fact, for that interest to be deprived, which is all we have to worry about for standing, after all.
But the city surely was allowed to dispose of the car after the 30th day.
No,
and
but you're arguing he didn't have enough of an interest left in the car even to raise his point about the defacement of the car. And
yeah.
I'm just saying, if that's the statute, it seems to me that just can't be right.
I see, obviously, that the court does not agree with us on the standing point, but nonetheless, we would argue that,
well,
that even if we lose on standing...
Well, maybe we're just
getting
a hard time to
use the
work here.
Let me ask you this question, moving on to the Fourth Amendment point.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a hypothetical. I'm a professional photographer, and I own a really expensive camera, and I happen to be standing on the street filming when a crime is committed. And so the police come and they take my camera from me. They say, we need this camera as evidence. And they take it and they keep it and they keep it and they keep it. And eventually they say to me, well, you have to pay us a certain amount of money to get your camera back. I take it you think that's fine.
Well, I would ask there if it were, I mean, Illinois law sets forth certain provisions that allows the city to collect towing and storage fees for cars, which makes this quite different. From our position, the car was available to be retrieved. We were no longer holding on.
I'm trying to get at a prior point, which is, frankly, what I conceptualize as a takings point. The state has taken this man's property, his car, or my camera, or anything else, for a public purpose, namely to investigate a crime. Very important public purpose. Ordinarily, when the state temporarily takes property for a public purpose, the financial, and I'm using the state to include the city or anything, any other public entity, ordinarily the money goes in the other direction. It has to pay the owner of that property the reasonable use of that property, even for a temporary taking. There are many cases to that effect. Now, you're saying that because the city has decided to take this man's car, a different set of rules applies, even though the camera would take up some space. If I take it you're thinking if my car was parked on the street in front of my house and the police decided for some reason they felt like having it for a while, they could go take my car for as long as they wanted, and then I'd have to pay a towing fee to get it back. It seems to me that the model that you're using fails to recognize the public purpose of the taking here. It's a taking that occurs not because there's an abandoned car on the road, not because there's been a stolen vehicle that might be used for crime, not because of anything. It's just been taken. The city decided it wants to keep it, and then it says, oh, and by the way, you have to pay us to get it back instead of we having to pay you for its use.
Well, of course, there is no takings claim here. I mean, this is a
Fourth
Amendment.
Well, this is a 12b-6 dismissal.
Well,
right?
But they have certainly never argued takings, so it's our position that a takings claim would be waived. I mean, had they perhaps brought this complaint in and to this district court argued taking, maybe, but they never presented that issue to the district court. But if I could just move on and try to address your question further. Because it's a Fourth Amendment and a substantive due process claim, we need only show that our conduct here is reasonable, not irrational. And our position is it's entirely reasonable for the Illinois legislature to authorize cost recovery in cases where cars are evidence rather than, say, cameras or something else, because cars are very, very expensive for the police to deal with. The impoundment and storing is very expensive, and we know that it's not irrational to attack one part of a problem at a time.
Even if the person doesn't want you to keep it any longer than you have to, I mean, you kept it for a while, a few days, I gather, and then you were done with it. And instead of letting him have it back or having some other more reasonable arrangements for compensation, you hold it hostage and tell him you're going to crush it.
Well, that's actually not what we did. We offered him a hearing, and we know from this case that we, will liberally waive towing and storage fees.
What is the nature of the hearing?
It's actually not in the record, but I do know from our investigation, I could tell the court a little bit about it. It's quite like, there's a case called Holstein versus City of Chicago that we rely on in our brief, and it would look quite like the type of hearing that this court approved in Holstein. Mr. Lee could have called the telephone number in the notice. The hearing would have been either on the telephone or in person. It would have been his choice. He would have had a chance to tell the hearing officer his side of the story. The hearing officer could have made a decision then and there.
Is the hearing officer authorized to waive statutory fees?
The hearing officer is authorized to waive fees. And in many
100%
cases...
100% of fees. The hearing officer is authorized just to say, okay, you don't have to pay fees. And your position is that the case-by-case adjudication, as opposed to a general rule that crime victims don't have to be held hostage by the city, is no requirement of the law.
The hearing officers do regularly waive fees the usual reason is because it's a crime victim and it's shown that the person is totally innocent, and as a matter of administrative grace, we waive fees. And that was a point I want to go back to your prior question, because it's also our position that it's reasonable for the Illinois legislature to conclude in most cases where cars are impounded that the owner is somehow guilty.
For evidentiary purposes, when it says on the top of the notice for investigative purposes?
It would be reasonable in that case, and when they're not guilty, we waive the fees if you request a hearing. I mean, this is why the reason we offer
it. The Illinois legislature has decided to engage in a presumption of guilt in this instance, as opposed to
Illinois law. There's no challenge to the Illinois law here, and the Illinois law.
Told me that they use a presumption of guilt, which seems to me rather shocking.
And then maybe a challenge should be brought to the Illinois wording is very, very broad. It says in any case when a law enforcement agency impounds a car, they can assess towing and storage fees. And we follow that, and then we do waive fees as circumstances dictate. And one circumstance would be if the victim comes forth and shows, you know, they're an entirely innocent party. And that's how the hearings tend to work, to answer Judge Caney's question. And, of course, if Lee were unhappy with the outcome of the hearing, he could challenge it in state court. That's what Holstein says. So there's perfectly adequate.
What was the time frame he had to bring to seek a hearing?
It was the 30 days. The notice said he just had to request a hearing in 30 days or come get the car, and that would involve paying towing and storage fees.
And it wasn't good enough that his lawyer got in touch with the city within the 30 days.
Well, I mean, that actually wasn't part of the complaint, but the lawyer did negotiate down the fees.
But that's the point. You're trying to say he didn't take advantage of the hearing, and yet this very informal thing, the lawyer contacts the city well within the 30 days because he gets the car back in the 31st day.
I don't actually know what happened in that particular case with the lawyer. I do know that, if he had pursued the hearing process, he could have gotten the fees reduced to nothing. Now, in this case, they weren't reduced to nothing, and he could challenge that in state court if he's unhappy with that hearing process. But he hasn't brought a procedural, and then he could ultimately go into federal court with a procedural due process claim, but he hasn't challenged that. Let's see. Well, I've sort of gotten off my argument, but I think
you
what
can
I'll
have a couple more minutes because I'm going to give them a chance for some rebuttals.
Okay. As I was starting to say, I wanted to touch on two main points today. The first point is the Fourth Amendment claim pertaining to the towing and storage fees. And as we explained in our brief, by the time Lee sought to retrieve the car, the search and seizure were over. The city was more than willing to return the car at that point, and the incident had devolved into a dispute about money. How much, if anything, the city was entitled to collect from Lee for towing and storage. The Fourth Amendment has never been concerned with garden variety billing disputes or with the extent to which a government can hold property as a security on a debt owed.
But that's not the gist of their Fourth Amendment claim. Their claim is, could the government seize my camera, for example, and say, mm-hmm. we've decided to seize it, but you can only get it back if you pay us. You know, we have to pay insurance fees because of this. Can payment be a legitimate condition of returning somebody's property? It's our position that... And the government says we don't need it anymore, we don't want it, but we're just going to hold it until you pay it.
Well, I mean, but when, you know, the government is, you know, authorized to charge those fees, and
that's
really...
the whole question. Is it legitimately authorized? Your answer is...
Well, we believe it is under Illinois law, and there's no challenge for that.
The Fourth Amendment? I mean, isn't that our issue, in other words? That, you know, if you're right, in Illinois law... has legitimately carved out this area of cars, and that none of us are safe in having our cars because the police can come take them whenever they want to and hold them until we pay large towing fees. Maybe that's the law. If the Fourth Amendment says that can't be the law, then it isn't the law, right? You know, so that's our issue.
But I feel in that case, then you need to bring a challenge. Then the law is an unlawful forfeiture law. You know, but whereas we're just simply following the law, and then we do, you know, waive fees so we don't have to in certain circumstances. But there's no challenge here that saying, you know, this law that says the state of Illinois can collect these fees, I mean, that's an unlawful forfeiture.
I thought they were precisely saying that that law violated the Fourth Amendment in this circumstance.
My understanding is it's a challenge to the city's policy. It's not saying there's anything wrong with the law itself. Somehow saying that, you know, I thought it's a municipal policy issue.
Well, we'll see.
But I'll just move on. But even if the city's actions here do constitute a seizure that should be tested under Fourth Amendment reasonableness standards, those actions were reasonable for the reasons this court articulated in Miller versus City of Chicago, where the court upheld the city's policy of collecting towing and storage fees from the owners of recovered stolen vehicles. So it's our view that even if the Fourth Amendment is implicated in this case, Miller controls the outcome of this case. And then finally, I was going to touch on the standing issue. And our position here is that because Lee did not present allegations that he had a property interest in the car at the time the numbers were affixed, he lacked standing to complain about them. Section 4-205 of the Illinois Vehicle Code required the city to give Lee notice of where his vehicle was being held and warn him that it could be sold if it was not properly claimed. The city complied with that section. Section 4-208 of the Illinois Vehicle Code then authorized the city to dispose of the vehicle if it hadn't been claimed within the time period provided by law. He waited to claim his car until after the retrieval period had expired, and he has not presented evidence or even alleged that the inventory numbers were fixed prior to the expiration of his right to retrieve. Because he had no right to the car, he suffered no injury, and he therefore does not have standing to complain about the city's conduct. If this court has no further questions, we respectfully request that the court affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you, Ms. You have 2 minutes for your rebuttal.
First of all, there is no Illinois statutory authority that allows the city to charge for towing and storage of a vehicle taken for purposes of evidence. The statutory authority applies to vehicles which have been either abandoned, left unattended, wrecked, burned, or partially dismantled, thereby creating a traffic hazard, or vehicles which are abandoned, lost, stolen, or unclaimed vehicles, or vehicles determined to be hazardous, dilapidated motor vehicles. There's no statutory authority for the city to do
what they
do.
I thought council was referring to something that gave similar to that.
Only in, they have the right to charge for towing and storage only for these types of vehicles, not for a vehicle that was seized or that was impounded for purposes of evidence. There's no statutory authority here.
Is the key word impounded? I mean, in other words, that you're saying that statute limits charging for impoundment only to those factors?
That's correct.
Those are the statutes that were cited in the city's brief that you addressed in your reply brief?
That's correct, Your Honor. Secondly, with respect to the Miller case, Miller was not...
I don't want to prolong this argument forever here, but... doesn't the city have a government have a right to seize anything for evidence or purposes, regardless of any statute?
The only question is whether they can charge it, and the problem is that they walk into the fourth.
But they say that the remedy is to ask for a hearing, and if you have a hearing and you're an innocent victim, that there's a waiver of the charge.
again, we're not talking about procedural due process here, and we're not talking about the hearing. We're saying that there's an unreasonable seizure here. The city can get its money if it wants to. It can return the vehicle,
well,
terminate.
Why is this an unreasonable seizure?
It's an unreasonable seizure because
somebody shot at this car, and they think that they want it. They want to seize it. They don't need any ordinances or anything to seize it to conduct an investigation.
We agree, and we have no dispute about the first 10 days. We aren't asking for money for that period of time. We're saying at the end of the 10 days, they should have returned the vehicle to Mr. Lee, and they didn't. At that point, again, what was initially reasonable became unreasonable. What was initially a legitimate taking or legitimate impounding became a seizure in violation of the Fourth Amendment.
Well, if he would have called this number, hypothetically, let's say he called and somebody in the 20th day said, "Oh, yes, this you can come and get your car. There won't be any charge."
There'd be no problem. And in fact, he did call. It's alleged in the complaint. He did call. He called. He had his lawyer call. There was a negotiation during the period of time. And frankly, you know, it may have been a hearing for all practical purposes.
So, but in my example, then the system, the scheme, would be perfectly acceptable.
The only problem is that they have no authority to charge. And not to allow him to pick up the vehicle at the end of the time when they no longer need it. There's no statutory authority, and because it's a seizure, because it becomes a seizure, there's a violation of the Fourth Amendment, and that is the problem. The city can ask for the money. They can file a lawsuit against Mr. Lee, but the first 10 days are perfectly legitimate. But at the end of the 10 days, they should have given the vehicle back, and they should have, if they wanted money for that time period, they should have sued him for it. Just briefly, the Miller case was not a Fourth Amendment seizure case, and there was a legitimate interest of the people whose vehicle stolen was met, and so it was reasonable to allow a charge in that case.
Thank you, Ms.
Thank you very much.
Thanks to both counsel. The court will take the case under advisement.